Let's Talk on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Mr. Talk. And you know what? We got one special show for you today, man. I tell you. Oh, man. I don't know how I'm going to handle it myself. Hope you don't get on through this. I hope you will. Hey, y'all. What's going on? Hey, Sapphire. What's going on? See y'all there in the chat room. My two guests. Welcome to the show. Oh, man. It's Thursday, y'all. It's Thursday. I tell you. One more day in the week. One more day in the week. Got your weekend going on. There's nothing wrong with that at all. Nothing wrong with that at all. Man. All right. Well, you know, today's topic, surviving the loss of a loved one. You know, that's a very, how can I say? Can you say it's a very personal type thing sometimes? You know, because man, that's something that's just gut-wrenching when it happens, you know? I know what I'm talking about, man. Don't think so. You know, and the bad part about it, I think the bad part, you know, during the moment, just eventually, just a good minute. Well, you know what? When you're going through that, that's what you really want. I know from experience, okay? And you don't want to hear. And grieving process, man, I tell you, how long are you supposed to grieve? You know, some people think, you know, it takes a couple of months or a year at the most, and you're supposed to be over it and moving on. But it's not that easy, y'all. It's just not that easy. I know some of y'all out there thinking, well, what makes him such an expert on this thing? Well, I'm going to tell you what makes me such an expert. You know, I lost three very close family members within a 2.5 year span. Okay? So that what makes me such an expert at this surviving the loss of a loved one topic we have today. That's right. Three very important people. My mom, my dad. Oh, I'm sorry, it's four, actually. My mom, my dad, my brother, and a lady I called my second mom. All in a 2.5 year period. So if you want to go out there and question my, how can I put it? Question whether I know what I'm talking about? Oh, yeah, I definitely know what I'm talking about. So what we going to say is sit back, going to get that cup of Joe, you know, that cup of water, you know, your glass of wine, your midday cocktail, whatever you're going to do, and relax, man, and have a, we're going to have a great show today. And also, we're going to have Mr. Dalton Gesick on the show. He's an author of Brotherly Love, okay? So, and he's wrote an interesting book dealing with how to deal with losing a loved one. So we're going to bring him on to the show in a little bit also. So like I said, get back, sit back, relax, and get ready for a good show because we got a lot of information for you today. Okay? All right. Now, for those that's listening and want to be a part of, want to make a comment or what have you, you can give us a call at 347-838-8622. You can email me at ericlesstalk@gmail.com, or you join us in the chat room. Just go to www.blogtalkradio.com/Eric Jackson 62, all one word, and it'll drop you right into our chat room. Okay, now if you want to do all that, just go to www.blogtalkradio.com and go to the search box and type in Mr. Talk, all one word, right there in the chat room. Because we want to hear everything you got to say on this subject, because I know some of you got some testimonies and some knowledge out there that can help all of us. You know, so nothing, nobody's comment or anything is taken away. So with that being said, we're going to go ahead and get our preliminaries out of the way, and then we're going to go ahead and, we're going to go ahead and get on with this show. All right. Now, the quote of the day, the house rules. Okay, the house rules are simple. We encourage open dialogue and we like to hear everyone's opinion. Please respect everyone's time to speak. In other words, do not talk over each other. Please make your comments or response as short and sweet, as short and to the point as possible. So somebody told me to make a response sweet, so okay. As short and to the point as possible. Okay, but here's my biggest thing. No personal attacks are allowed. None. Nick's nine. No. Okay? We are adults, so please let's conduct ourselves in that manner. All right? Because when you start personally attacking someone, that shows that you're not ready to hold discussions and things like that. So that's childish. So we don't allow that on this show. Okay? Now, if anyone violates these rules, I would not hesitate to handle you on the spot, okay? And by handling you, I'll put you on the sideline. You'll be talking, but no one be hearing you. All right? Okay. So, with that being said, let's get on with the quote of the day. Now, the quote of the day, man, I tell you, oh, man, this was hard trying to find a quote of the day, one that really would stand out. So, instead of just having one quote of the day, today we have two quotes of the day. I know. And boy, I tell you, it was hard to find these, something like this. But I'm going to go ahead and read the quotes, and then we're going to get on with the song of the day. All right. The quote of the day, number one, death leaves a heartache no one can heal. Love leaves a memory no one can steal. Ain't that something? You want me to say that again? Death leaves a heartache no one can heal. Love leaves a memory no one can steal. Man, that was quote number one. That is, I tell you. Here's quote number two. When someone you love becomes a memory, the memory becomes a treasure. Now, see, those two can be put together in one big old thing, and man, I tell you, you got something going on there. Oh boy, I'm telling you, when someone you love becomes a memory, the memory becomes a treasure. And you know what? I can get with that. I really understand that. You know, it's the only thing you have to hold on to. You know what I mean? That memory, you know. I remember coming home from the service all the time, and I just called my mom when I got on a certain bridge, and she'd be so happy. She'd be outside waiting for me when I when I would drive up in our driveway. I mean, wow. You know, the conversations we had on a daily basis, you know, I still have her phone number in my phone. So, yes, I agree with that, you know. A memory becomes a treasure because that's all we have left. I know. It's all right. But anyway. Now, here it is, y'all. The song of the day. I hope you enjoy it. And then when we come back, we're going to bring in Mr. Dalton Geeks It. And we're going to get on with the meat of the show. All right. So, without further ado, here it is, y'all. The song of the day. Don't let the sun go down on me. Wow, man, I tell you. Oh, y'all just don't know. I was an old boy. I was in memory land there for a moment. I'm telling you, man, that is a very touching song, and I love that song. I really do. Thank you, Sapphire. You know, when you lose someone that's very close to you, sometimes that's the way you actually feel. You know, you feel like the sun is just going down on you. You know, there's nothing you can do to change it. It's happening, and you just feel like your life is sucked out of you. So how do you work through that? You know, there's time where you work, and you think, well, you know, I'm getting better. Then the tiniest of things will come to your mind and just break you down. You know? And is grieving just crying? Now, a lot of people say, well, you just need to get a good cry in. But really, is it just about crying? Is that what grieving really is? Well, those are some of the things we're going to be talking about today. So, the young man I'm going to bring you onto the show right now, he's a 23-year-old college graduate. As I mentioned before, he has written a book called Brotherly Love, and it has won the Christian Choice Book Award, among other top awards and, reviews. So, without further ado, we're going to bring in Mr. Dalton Giesick. All right, Dalton, welcome to the show, man. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on your show today.
Oh, no problem. Let me show you some love.
Thank you.
All right. Well, man, you know, today's topic is a real, ooh, man, I tell you, it's a real doozy. So before we get into the meat of the show, let's talk a little bit about your book and what was the reason that you decided to write the book, and, you know, what purpose do you want the book to serve?
The reason it all started when I was real young. I loved to read. I read all kinds of books. I've read mysteries, thrillers, Harry Potter, all kinds of books. And so one day I thought on my bucket list I'd like to write a book. And so I was thinking to myself, what could I write a story about? So I gave it some thought for a couple days, and I thought about my brother, all the people that I've worked with, maybe the people I've went to school, neighbors, family members. Maybe they don't know that I have a brother or that I'm not just an only child. Because like in school, when they'd say, if you're an only child, stand over here. If you're not an only child, stand over here. Well, it was kind of confusing. Do I stand with the only child people, or do I go to the side that has siblings? So, because I didn't want to disrespect my brother and say that I don't have one when I do have one. So I thought I'd write this book to share with people that there's other people out there going through the same thing that they're going through, and that it's not just adults going through the same thing. It's through the eyes of a 9-year-old little boy going through the loss of his special person, his brother.
All right. So you were nine years old when you first started to write the book?
No, I was. I wrote it 2 years ago, just recently. So
okay.
I would have been 20, about 20.
Mm-hmm.
But when this event took place, we were 4 years apart. So I would have been, I think, 8 or 9, and he was 4 years old when he passed away.
Oh, okay. All right. And how can my listeners go, you know, get the book, and do you have a website they can go to get any more information about you?
Yes, if they would like to purchase the book or follow me, they can follow me on any media website, Twitter, Pinterest, Facebook, by searching Brotherly Love by Dalton Giesick. Or they can, if they would like to get a free preview, they can log on to my website, and Brotherly Love, the book, is being sold online. And all they have to do is click the subscribe button, fill out the appropriate information, and they will receive from me a free preview of the book along with audio to go along. And if they feel they want to continue on, then they can click on the subscribe button and purchase their copy of my book. And the website is Dalton, that's DalTonGiesick.com. And everything's up there. They can follow me, buy the book, subscribe, get their free preview, and whatever they're looking for.
All right. Thank you, sir. That sounds like something great to do. So y'all go out and support this young man. I'm already impressed with him. So, Dalton, the topic of the day is surviving the loss of a loved one. So, when we originally talked the first time, you said you had, some remedies for that. So what are some of your remedies to help those of us that have lost loved ones and still haven't, gotten over it?
Some things they can do are, it's always good to talk about it. You can talk about it with family, friends, talk about it. If you're going through it, you just talk about it over and over. Or if you know someone that is going through this process, it's just good to be there for them, support them. You can listen to them, and it's okay if they cry. There's no time limit for this process. It'll go on forever, and you just live the next day to the fullest because you know that your special person, whoever it may be that has passed, would not want you to be pretty much sad all the time. They'd want you to live your life to the fullest and get a hobby, or you can go to counseling. We did counseling when we moved to Colorado. Me and my mom and my dad did counseling, and it helped bring our family together and build a stronger relationship between all of us. So counseling helps, talking about it with friends, family members, and it's okay to cry. It shows emotion that you're grieving for that loss of that special person.
Well, let me ask you this question, Dalton. Now, on the part of the crying and the emotional, what if you've had, well, I'll say in my case, I've had, so many family members die within a short period of time. And, it's like becoming emotionally numb. You know what I mean? How do you deal with that kind of situation? How, in your opinion?
Well, to deal with it, you would want to find your strength through Jesus Christ, the Lord, and have faith in Jesus, and you just pray to him, and he'll walk you through it and helps you. Some days are going to be tough, and other days may be easier, but you're still going to want to pray to Jesus and ask him to help you and guide you, and you just know that in the back of your mind that one day when you die, you'll reunite with that special person, and you'll see them again like you've never even left. And we are definitely not on our own if we have the faith in Jesus. And there have been times that I have had to pray and ask Jesus to help me move on and to hang on. And I have always felt his presence within me when I pray to him at night and talk to him. He always helps me through it. So I was a Christian. So we went to a Christian counselor. And right after my little brother passed away, he helped me to understand my feelings and work through the grieving process because it was hard for me to share my feelings directly face-to-face with people. So the reason for the counseling was to go talk to the counselor, and he made us do all kinds of exercises and games, and just talking to him helped me with the grieving process. But at the same time, I was still very hard to talk to, like, my parents and tell them how I was feeling. So that was one reason I wrote the book, was because I felt it was easier to share my feelings on paper than directly face-to-face.
Okay. All right. Well, before we go any further, anyone with right now, we're talking with Dalton Giesick, the author of Brotherly Love, and we're discussing ways to get over losing a loved one. If you want to join the conversation, just give us a call at 347-838-8622. The lines are open. Or go to www.blogtalkradio.com/Eric Jackson 62. Join us in the chat room. Or just send me an email at ericlesstalk@gmail.com. Or you send it to me, I read it. It's just that simple. Dalton, to get back to the conversation, some of the so-called experts, they would say grieve big, grieve big. And basically what they're talking about, crying and, just basically crying. But is that the only grieving process that we can actually obtain or do? Or is there a different way of grieving?
Another way to grieve is by just simply going to the funeral. because you may regret it later in life if you do not go to the funeral. And when you go to the funeral, it shows that you are grieving and that you're with other people that are grieving with the same thing you're grieving with. So you'll have other supporters there at the funeral when you go to the funeral. So you can cry, go to the funeral, be with other supporters.
Okay. You know, and that's the thing. I think that's the thing that's really, in my situation, that's bothering me, because I haven't had that big boo-hoo-hoo cry, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, I, like you say, a lot of people have that big cry and get it all out, but I don't feel that I'm ready for that yet, you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, whether it's good or bad, I don't know. But, you know, if there's a specific time...
It's still good if you don't cry, but I still think it's good either way if you don't cry or if you do cry. It just still shows that you're going through the process. It might take longer for other people to go through this process, but it's always hard, and you'll never get over it, and you just live your life to the next and keep on living, and you might join a hobby or pick up some new instrument and start playing that and just try to move on, and because you'll never fully get over the loss.
Okay, sounds good. Let me bring another call in here, see what they have in questions for you. Call area code 303. Welcome to the show. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
I just want to say I am Dalton's mother, and I just want to say that I am just so proud of him and the way he's handled things. And he is a extremely shy kid. And introverted, and this was his way of knowing or expressing his feelings and getting it out on paper. And so I just want to say I'm just so proud of him.
All right, and that's always a good thing. You know, it's nothing like a parent showing support for the child, you know. Hey, and I applaud you as well, you know.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
So what do you think about Doctor's book?
You know, at first, to be truthfully honest, it was extremely hard as a mother to read it because it had happened so suddenly, unexpected.
Right.
But then I did, and I was just, you know, because Dalton, like I said, he was a very shy kid growing up, and we would try to talk to him about things, and you never really truly knew what a little child was going through. That book helped me understand what Dalton was going through. So, I am, like I said, I'm just proud of him for writing that book.
I bet you are. Since I have you on the line, let me ask you a couple of questions. How did you deal with the loss of your son, if you don't mind sharing with us?
Well, you know, I don't want to take away from Dalton or anything, but as a parent, I think you deal with it on a day-to-day basis. You got to allow yourself to go through each grieving stage and don't get stuck into a grieving stage.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but you said a grieving stage. Are they different grieving stages?
Oh, yeah, there's depression, there's anger, you know, everybody goes through different stages, and nobody is the same. You may go through the anger stage first. You may go through the depression stage first. You know, there's no right or wrong way of doing it, but my thing was not getting stuck in that stage, you know, and God really helped us to do that, to move on. Now, you may go back years later and end up, gosh dang it, I'm back in this depression stage, you know, but you got to move through it. You've got to just move through it and rely on God. Do a whole lot of praying. A whole lot of faith has gotten our family through this thing.
Okay. All right. Thank you, ma'am. And may we have your name, please? I'm sorry.
Stacia.
Stacia. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Stacia, for that. And I'm sure Dalton is proud of you as well.
No more. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of love for each other, and we set and promised us three that this will not tear this family apart. And we are going on 15 years after Dayton, since Dayton has been gone, and we are still going strong. So,
well let me ask the both of you this question here. What if you feel like, you know, you done lost loved ones and that was all you had? How do you deal with that?
Say
you
that
know,
one more time.
Okay, you lost a loved one and you feel that's all you had left in this world. You understand what I'm saying? They were it. And once they left this earth, you know, you just have this big lonely feeling. How do you deal with that?
Dalton, do you want to go first or do you want me to?
I'll let you go first.
Okay. I, as a mother in our situation, I knew I had another child. So I had to really pull myself up and be there for him. You know, this happened at Christmas time. I did not want to put up a Christmas tree. I still to this day have a hard time putting up a Christmas tree. But I knew when Dalton was little, I had to put up that Christmas tree. You know, if anything, you know, everybody has somebody in their life, you know, that they're close to, that's still here on earth. And, you know, just push for that. And like I said, a whole lot of praying. There were a lot of times I'd go out in my garage and I'd be screaming to God because I was so mad. And I knew he was there. I knew he was there. And there were times that I would, like Dalton said, we would cry out to ask God to hang on to us, hang on to us. And he was hanging on to us, just like that footprint poem, you know, when God is carrying you, you may only see one footprint. He was there each and every moment. And in our situation, we want to see Dayton again. We don't want to give up because we know that Dayton wouldn't want us to. So.
Okay. Dalton, you want to have anything to add to that?
Well, one of the things that helped me go through this process was when my parents let me get a dog. We got a little mini pen. So we got that dog, and I think he really helped fill the void and all the holes that I wasn't able to do with my brother. So I spend all that time with him trying to, but the dog will never really fully take the place of my brother who I've lost.
Okay. Now, you know, this is something I'm sure a lot of people have done, you know, just in the heat of the moment. But Michael, here's another question. Have you ever questioned God as to why? Have you ever had that moment to you where you just said, ask him why, to where your faith dipped a little bit?
Yes, I have.
And I have too. Both of us have. All three of us have.
Okay. And how did you come out of that?
Dalton, you want to go?
You go first.
Okay. I was like, you know, that's when I said when I'd go out to the garage. Mm-hmm. And I don't want people thinking that I'm crazy or anything, but I would literally scream out to God. I would curse at him. You know, Jesus, you don't understand. You don't understand what I'm going through. How can you do this? I can't have no more children anymore. He was a miracle baby to begin with. Both of my children were. You will never understand, and I was angry. And just like we are talking today right now, a voice came over and said, how do you think I felt when I was being nailed to the cross and having to watch my mother watch that?
Wow.
And there was nothing she could do. Something to that effect. I mean, this was early on. And that shook chills up and down my spine. And then I realized he understands.
Hmm. All right. Well, I see we have another call on the line, so let me bring them in. All right. Area code 254. You're on the air. Can we have your name? And what do you have to add today?
Hi, Mr. Eric. This is Shasta.
Hello, Shasta. How are you doing?
I'm good. In relation to the topic, I actually lost 4 kids. It was very close, I'll say, in a 3-year span of time. And you kind of feel like, how can the world go on? How does the world still turn? You know, how can people wake up and continue to do the things that they do, but you feel like you're missing so much? You ache. It's just an aching feeling. And for a long time, I was lost. I agree with doubting God. I used to ask him, you know, is it just not meant for me to have kids? Because every time I get pregnant, you take it. Is it something with me? Is it, you know, because I'm a Christian and I really believe that he already wrote my story. My story was already written.
Mm-hmm.
And so for these things to happen, he knew what my life was going to, what different things were going to go on throughout my life. And looking back at the situation now, obviously I wasn't equipped to have that many kids, knowing that different issues were going to come up with me in the future that my kids didn't need to be a part of. And it took now to be able to deal with it, to look at it. It takes now to be able to look at it that way. But then I definitely couldn't look at it like that. I honestly felt like, you know, I had done something. You know, maybe I was a child and God felt like, you know, I wasn't listening or I wasn't doing good enough, and that was my problem. I honestly did.
Very interesting. So, I mean, did you go through depression, or, you know, how did you handle that?
I went through a lot of, like she was saying, I went through a lot of different stages. I think my first stage was anger. I was angry. Before depression, it was anger. I was angry at everything around me, everything, everybody. It was hard to hold conversations. It was hard to be around other people. It was definitely hard to be around people with children, to hear babies crying or to see young kids. It was hard for me to deal with that because I'd always known, you know, I'm supposed to have a baby.
I did the same thing.
Yeah, or you would see pregnant people and you're thinking, you know, I was once pregnant. And just with my kids, I would get all the way to about 5 months pregnant and I would miscarry. So if you're a woman, you know that at 5 months you've already felt the baby move. You've probably already named the baby. You've had ultrasound pictures. You know, I've actually been there. So it's definitely hard. But after the whole anger, after I got in wraps with the whole anger thing, and it takes a lot of prayer. So when you guys say, you know, I prayed a lot or I talked to God, I don't think there's anything ever wrong with questioning God. I really don't, because Job questioned God. So there's nothing wrong with asking him why things are happening to you. And there's always a reason. And I really feel like there was definitely a reason for it. And today I can say, even through being depressed and angry and bitter, I was bitter too. Even going through all of that, I can say I'm grateful. Because with my testimony, I'm able to talk to other women who have had numerous miscarriages and let them know, you know, you can get through this. You can, you know, through a lot of prayer and supplication, you know, even through the hard times, you have to be thankful. You got to continue to thank God, because if something somehow it wasn't meant for that child to be here. It's hard for us to stomach it. It doesn't necessarily have to be a child. Like you, Mr. Eric, it could have been your mother. You know, we don't know what reasons specifically why God took these people from this earth. But there was definitely a good reason for it. You know, whether there was going to be suffering in the future for these people or whether or not he just felt like their time was up. You know, they say 5 out of 5 people die. So our time is going to come too. And I definitely take more time to appreciate the people who are in my life. Definitely take more time to tell those people I love them. You know, you mean something to me because your number could come by day.
Right, right.
Yeah, that you are absolutely right, because with Dayton, we have him on videotape that night that he passed away running around like a 4-year-old at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
When I walked him down the stairs, he took his last breath. And you are absolutely right. And where I find peace and comfort, and I know Dalton does too, is knowing that we will one day see him again. And I had somebody come to me and ask me, what's your first question to God when you see him? Are you going to ask him why? And I started laughing, and I said, no. I will be so happy to see him, I won't even care why anymore.
You know, I'm listening to y'all, and, you know, it's sounding so great, but, you know, I'm still dealing with some stuff in my family, and I guess the stage I'm in right now is I'm all alone. You know, there's no one left for me to lean on when I need, you know, to talk to someone. So
you are never alone. You have God.
Never.
And if,
there you
and
go.
If you believe in God, you are never, ever, ever alone. He is right there beside you.
Well, yeah,
and
that
in his word, he said in his word, I will never leave you nor forsake you. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's powerful. You're right. He said it in his word, I will never leave you. And his book, he's not a lie. He said, I am a man that cannot lie. So maybe it's at the point in your life where there's no need for you to look to the left and to the right or look for anybody else to lean on. He's looking for you to lean on him. He's saying, it's time for you to lean on me, brother. It's time. If you lean on me, I'll get you through this thing.
And you may not feel like he's there, but he is there. You know, and if you need to go to counseling, because that's what we did, but I highly recommend a Christian counselor.
All
somebody
right.
Somebody who has faith.
Dalton, you have anything to add?
Yeah, just go to a counselor and you can talk to them, or you can go to, like, church has groups that you can join and you can meet people and or start any group and meet people and get to know them, and you have people to talk to, and then first find and accept God into your life and know that he's there, and then you can talk to him, and so you're never alone.
All right. Okay. I can definitely get with that there. Okay, so we've talked about the symptoms and what we go through. So besides the counselor, what are other ways we can work through this loss of a loved one? How do we come back to being a productive part of society? Because, you know, there are cases where people shut down, you know, completely. You know, whether it's grief or depression or so be it, you know, it just gets to a point to where you don't want to do anything. You don't want to go outside. You don't want to be bothered. You know, and one of the biggest things that always bothered me, you know, and I really got tired of hearing was, well, he's in a better place. I feel so sorry for your loss. How are you feeling? You know, after a while, that got old and very irritating to me.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So, you know, and I think that kind of made me even angrier, you know, because I'm like, stop asking me that.
You're going through the stages of grief, and it's just taking you longer to get out of that one stage. Mm-hmm. And but don't stay there. Don't stay there. Your loved one who passed away would not want you to stay there. So you've got to strive each and every day to be that man or that woman or that child, the sister, brother, whoever, that you know God wants you to be, that you know that your family member would want you to be.
Definitely that, and it's okay to acknowledge. I think sometimes we want to forget because even some time afterwards, I found myself trying to hide it from myself, like trying to mask over the fact that it had happened. I don't know if anybody else has experienced that, but I tried to hide it from myself. I put it in the back of my mind like it didn't exist, and that was my way of coping. I figured if I didn't think about it, if I didn't think about my kids and didn't think about the fact that they ever existed, maybe I could move past it. But that doesn't help because in a way that's denial. So I think sometimes it helps if you have actual pictures of the loved one. There's nothing wrong with keeping those pictures in front of you or keeping those pictures around because they do exist and they do exist.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So it's okay to acknowledge that person is a part of my life. You know, that person is living and is in good health with the Lord. As far as I'm concerned, you know, my kids are watching over me on a daily basis. And when I speak about my kids, I speak of all of them because people say, oh, you have kids? How many kids do you have? I have six. That's deep. Because I have two living. But it's important to mention all of them because they are living, you know what I mean? They were entities. They are people. So to be able to acknowledge the fact that they did exist, they are existing, helps you kind of get over that too. And not to cover that up. Keep those people, you know, in your sight. Pray for them daily, you know. Just make sure you keep their memory alive.
And you got to remember that other people that have probably, you know, that would irritate you, stuff that they would say that irritate you. It took me a long time, and I'm talking years. It took me a long time to just stop and put myself in their shoes. They have never lost someone that's so close. They've never lost a child or anything. So they don't know what to say.
Interesting. You know, I'm glad you said that because I find myself that in that situation now when, you know, someone says, well, I lost so-and-so and I lost so-and-so. And, you know, I just don't say anything, you know, because I know how I felt. So, you know, but it's an awkward moment because you want to say something, but there's really nothing you can say.
Right.
You know, but they take
just
you as
be
being
there.
Yeah, you know, so I don't know. You know, I don't know what stage I am right now. I don't know because, you know, right now I think I'm emotionally detached. And I also think, you know, that, hey, I just feel like I'm alone, you know. I know y'all say I'm not, and I realize that. I do believe in God, what have you. But to be able to pick up that phone and say, hey, mama, how your day is going, I can't do that anymore. You know, or call my brother and say, hey, what's up, big head, what you doing? You know, it's just, I can't do that anymore. And I know
that feeling because I don't have my little son coming up and giving me a big, wrapping his arms around my neck and giving me a big old hug. I miss that. But those memories of him and the little things that he would do and the goofiness of him and him and Dalton, the way they reacted, brings a smile to my face. And then I kind of get over that hump a little bit.
Okay.
I would think that it would be okay to speak with your family members as if they still exist. I wouldn't think you were crazy. But, you know, per se, if I had lost, you know, someone like a mother or a brother, I haven't. I've lost my children. But I would still talk to those people as if they still exist. No, you may not get the response that you want, but maybe it'll be more freeing for you to be able to have those conversations. you know, Mom, today wasn't a good day, but I know you watching over me, and you know, I know you and God having conversations about me, but man, you know, just conversating and just feeling, you know, just feeling free. Maybe that'll free it up just a little bit.
I used to pray to God to just let Dayton come to me in my dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And it took over a year, and he did. And it was just the most awesomest, just greatest dream I have ever had. And I know it came from God letting me know that he's okay. And he was happy. He was running around. I mean, it was so real. So real. And I woke up that next morning and started writing in my journal. And that's another tip, is writing. Right. Get a journal. Because like with Dalton, like I said, he's a very shy, introverted child. And that was how he could go through his grief. And he wrote and wrote and wrote. And that's where he came up with this book. And I see it. I don't know if he feels it, but I see it as a mother. And now he's 23 years old.
Mm-hmm.
That was more powerful for him than I feel like. I mean, granted, the counseling was great. But for him, I think writing that book was more therapeutic for him.
All right. I can see the point there. I really can. You know, it's just, I don't know. It's, a lot of times it's easier said than done. You know, I guess.
Yeah,
basically
amen to that.
Yeah, you just have to push and keep pushing, I guess.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. Very. Now, you know, there's other issues, you know, and like I say, some experts say you have to grieve, and grieving to them is crying, you know, and y'all mentioned a couple here that I hadn't even thought about, you know, anger and part of the grieving, you know, avoidance, which I had never thought about also. Now, some say keep a small token, which you said you keep, you have a video of your son, correct?
Yeah, we do. We have several videos. Now, still to this day, I cannot watch it.
Okay.
Because it's hard, because I'd hear his voice.
Mm-hmm.
But we have pictures of him throughout the house. Dalton.
Right.
Has a lot of stuff of Dayton's, and he picked out what he wanted, you know, and they're in his room, and but you don't want to make a shrine, because you will never get over that grief and the depression and all that stuff. You don't want to you may not want to get rid of it. Some people do, some people don't. Either way is okay. You just don't want to make a shrine out of it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I understand that. You know, because I've often said I have, you know, a video of my mom's memorial service, and I often say once I can sit down and watch that, I'm okay. You know, that's what a lot of times I say. However, I haven't gotten to that point yet. I mean, I look at the cover, but I just cannot bring myself to put it in and watch the service. You know, so.
It's okay. It is okay. And there's no need in beating yourself up over it because you haven't. We have Dayton's on a tape, you know, not a video, but on a tape. At first, right after it, I used to listen to it and listen to it and listen to it, and I realized that was not helping me because I was staying right there.
Mm-hmm.
I was staying in the grieving, in the depression. And, you know, and I was not, you never really let go, but I wasn't moving forward. And so I haven't listened to it since, you know, and I don't think I could. Because I know he's happy. I know he's up there probably laying black marks on the golden street and just having a heyday. You know, that's where my mind goes. So, mm-hmm. and that's where I want to keep my mind. He's running through the field.
And me personally, after my loss, they actually let me hold my sons. They let me hold my sons. They actually dressed him, and they took pictures for me so that I could have a baby album. And my parents actually have it. I don't. It's at my parents' house. And it's not so much for me to look through, because I agree it's hard to look at things like that. And I don't think grief ever leaves. It's not something that you get over. You know, people say, oh, you know, yeah. I think it gets easier over time to deal with your grief, but grief
yeah.
doesn't go away.
You learn how to deal with it.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not something that's going to disappear. It could be years upon years, and like you said, there'll be different things that you see, different things you hear, things that you smell that remind you of that person. Or it'll be memories that'll come to play, and you just kind of have to stand back and take a couple of deep breaths, and things come over you, and other people might not understand it. And I just think that shows how important that person was to your life, that you can take that person's life lightly.
And that's great. You have that much love for that person.
Right.
And
wow.
and like you said, like your two quotes of the day,
mm-hmm.
I think it was that second one or something. I can't remember exactly what it was. I mean, when you do that, think of that quote. I used to put scriptures up
mm-hmm.
all over. And
right.
And it would just help me to get with it. But she's absolutely right. You really never truly get over the grief. You just learn how to deal with it better. Instead of making a spectacle like I did, I went to the grocery store thinking I could do it, and I get to the front door and break down, and people probably thought I was nuts. But see, when Dalton was in school, Dayton was always with me, and he went everywhere with me.
Mm-hmm.
I had to turn around and come home. Now I can laugh about it. Back then, I couldn't.
Right. So is that a common mistake a lot of us make, is trying to hold on too long? Is that such a thing?
Well,
no,
I know.
You can never hold on too
so.
Long.
Yeah,
I wouldn't
think so either. I think a common thing is that people tend to beat themselves up because they feel like they're hanging on too long, you know, and that... You know, they're not going to please God. You know, am I really moving forward through these grieving stages? I'm not. Maybe I'm not. Well, it's all in God's timing.
Okay.
I think...
hold on for a minute, Shasta.
Well,
please.
I was going to say... Yeah,
hold on for
I was
going to
say...
Hold on a minute, Shasta. Hold on. All right,
okay.
y'all. This
okay.
is Let's Talk on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Mr. Talk. And we have Dalton Gesick on the line, and we have his mother, Stacia. Have I said that
Stacia.
Correctly?
Stacia.
Okay.
Yeah.
Stacia. Okay.
Yeah.
And we have Shasta also. Let me not forget Shasta. And we're discussing how to survive losing a loved one. So if you want to join in the conversation today, just give me a call, 347-838-8622. The phone lines are open. Send me an email, erictalk@gmail.com. Or join me in the chat room, www.blogtalkradio.com/ericjackson62. All right, now we're going to go ahead and get on back to the conversation. And I'm sorry, Shasta, you was going to say something before I had to make my announcement?
Oh, yeah, I was just going to say that the grief, aside from the grief never going away, because it doesn't, it's just that it shouldn't be the main part of your life. Like Miss Stacia said, she had another son, so of course she had to move on rather quickly in order to be able to deal with the fact that, you know, I still have a child that I have to take care of. I have responsibilities that need to be dealt with. It just can't be the center of your life. It really can't, because then your grief turns into other things like depression. and then you really do need counseling. You know what I mean? Mm. So I honestly believe grief can turn into a lot of other problems, even physically. You know,
you really,
some
you
people
think
grieve so hard. I think some people grieve so hard, they sometimes die. You know, a person can grieve so hard, they die themselves.
Mm.
So you really have to, like she said, counseling is good, so you can really see where you are in your grieving process. And I don't think there's an order that it goes in. There's no such thing as an order of grief. But I think we need to know where we are in the process so you know if you need to seek more help, because you're down under. You know, it can get pretty bad to where your body starts deteriorating because of it.
Mm. Is there a part of grief to where you feel that there's no one that really understands? No one really knows what you're going through?
I had a short period of that.
Mm-hmm.
Dalton, I don't want to talk anymore because I feel bad, because Dalton, this is Dalton's interview as a mother.
Okay.
You're fine.
But I went through that, and as Shasta said, there was a lady back in our hometown that lost two of her children, and I would always think about that and think, man, I can't even imagine losing both of my boys. And mm-hmm. so she kind of gave me strength whenever, and she never knew this. Until I went back home and I told her, you know, every time I'd get down and think about that, I'd always think about you. You know, there are people out there that have it worse. At times you think there ain't no way. Nobody understands. Well, if you just stop in that moment and allow God to talk to your heart, you will realize that some people do have it bad. I can't even imagine what Shasta went through. You know, I only lost one child.
Mm. Wow. All right. Dalton, you have anything to add to it?
No, it's just that when I always think back to, like, when all the other kids would go and pick up their siblings, I wish that could have been me. So that goes back to when I got my dog, and he kind of helped fill those voids.
Mm.
You know,
oh,
those kids
okay.
doing stuff, never getting to, like, grow up together, never having that person there going to, like, the movies or to ride,
right.
driving our cars together or whatever.
All righty then. Wow, man, I tell you, this is something else.
Well, just so that you know, Mr. T, you have Dalton and myself here for you.
Oh,
yeah,
thank
and
you.
I know how you feel. So somebody knows how you feel.
Somebody
yeah.
knows how I feel. Okay. Okay. You know, as far as how I'm feeling, you know, it's a daily grind, you know, because I have my mother's and my father's ashes here with me. And, yeah, sometimes I do talk to them, you know, but sometimes I wish, you know, I just had that magical touch to bring them back, you know, just, you know, a short period of time. And this is why I'm saying this, because my biological father, I had met him. You know, we had lost contact, and we have finally reconnected, you know, about a year after we met. He was gone, you know, and I think, you know, what, a year before my mom passed. So now I'm like, what's really going on? You know, those two people I can sit down and talk to, and you know, they understood me, in words. You know, now it's to the point where I don't have that comfortable feeling right now. You know, it's like being just out there in the middle of the field, just wandering around sometime. You know, I guess, I don't know if that's a grieving stage, or because I still haven't had that big, what everybody call that big, you know, boo-hoo, crying thing. Now, I went through short periods where I cried. I haven't had the big breakdown yet. Am I still supposed to have that, or, you know?
No, my husband has never done that. My husband cried once. Dalton has cried, you know, maybe privately, Mm-hmm. You know, he kind of lashed out anger towards us. And the counselor said that's because he feels more comfortable with you guys. Because we felt like he was angry with us.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of lost my train of thought. I'm sorry. He said that he feels more comfortable with you so he can release that anger. So if you don't cry, quit dwelling on it. It's okay. It's okay. Mm. That time will come. And you may never. You may never. I mean, like you said, you've had little bits of it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right, little bits. And you know, last night I was laying down, you know, and thinking about doing this show, you know, it really, I tossed and turned all night long, you know, because it was really like, oh, man, how am I going to do this show tomorrow, you know?
And that's exactly how Dalton was doing. Wasn't you, Dalton?
Yes, I was. Because I can remember when I was real little and my grandma asked if I wanted to go to the funeral, and I did go to the funeral, and then she, during the funeral, asked if I wanted to go up and see him in the casket, and I didn't really understand what she was talking about, but I remember her walking me up there to go look at his body inside the casket.
Mm. Wow. You know, and that's another thing right there, to having to, well, in my mom's case, she was cremated, but in my dad's case, to go up there and just see them laying there, you know, I guess it puts a finality to it somewhat, in a point to where you're like, wow, this is real, you know?
I don't even remember the funeral. I just remember bits and pieces. I think I was still in shock and didn't want to believe. And, you know, still to this day, maybe little bits and pieces, my mother brings up stuff, and I'm like, really? Really? Mm. I don't remember that, you know? So, and that's who Dalton is talking about, was my mother had taken him up there. And Dalton did not understand. You know, he's like, why can't he get up? And my mom explained to him, it's like a glass of water. You have a glass, but you dump that water out, you still have a glass, but no water. His spirit is up in heaven, but his shell is still here. And she explained it to him so well. I probably didn't do her any justice right there, but she explained it to him so well that he understood, you know. But to this day, I can't do viewings.
Mm. Okay.
Because in my head, I see Dayton.
Oh, wow. I can believe that. So let me ask this question, and we're going to switch a little bit to the kids. How can we get kids through a major trauma event like this? I mean, how do we get them through it?
You love them. You talk to them all the time because Dalton would clam up and he would get angry. That's why we put him into counseling. I mean, all three of us were into counseling because we didn't know what to do. And then, you know, he has a tendency to this day to worry about his mom and dad. You know, are we going to be okay? Well, we're going to be just fine, you know. So, but love them. Love them. Hold them. Don't take them for granted.
Okay, but in other words, we shouldn't sugarcoat anything. Explain to them what has happened and to the best of our ability to help them understand.
Exactly, yeah. And get them into counseling. I for a child, I think they need to be in counseling because we don't know, because we're going through the same thing.
Okay, you wanted to say something, Dalton?
Oh, just let them share their own feelings and let them be accepted and join them in the arguments and the conversations you may have, and just try to explain to them what happened. And
yeah, you got to allow him, like we had to allow Dalton to voice his own feelings. Some of his feelings made me mad, but I had to keep my mouth shut. I had to keep my mouth shut because those are his feelings.
Wow. Ooh,
yeah.
Man, I tell you.
Grief is a hard thing.
Yes, it is. Hold on, I have someone else on the line. Let me bring them in real fast. Hello, 111. You're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Well, this sounds like a serious topic today.
Well, yes, it is, Joe. How to survive losing a loved one.
Any loved one, or is that going to be spouse?
Any loved one, Joe.
Anyone loved one? Okay.
It's any loved one, anyone that you're close to, anyone you consider as a friend, a family member, someone you've spent your life with, a neighbor, a friend.
How do you survive? You have
Yes.
to. You have to grieve, and don't let anybody tell you that you can't, man or woman, especially men, because men are always told, don't cry. Get it all out. Don't try to feel too much guilt if you, in retrospect, think there were signs that perhaps gave you this, the idea that you could have helped. So don't take on too much guilt over that, because a lot of people will say, oh, I saw something, I knew something like this was going to happen. You know, if it's self-inflicted, if it's suicide, or if a you know, if a person in the family doesn't want to let you know about their sickness and then they die, then you might feel guilty over that. You have to survive. If you didn't cause the person's death, indirectly or directly, and it's a blow to you because of somebody that you really love, you have to just grieve and let time take its toll.
You know what, I'm glad you mentioned that, because you brought something back to where I remember one time I called my mom, and she was coughing real bad, and I asked her the question, do you need me to come home right now? You know, and she said no. But, you know, not a week later, she was in a nursing home, you know, because she had lost it, because she had a brain cancer, you know, where cancer had spread to her brain. So, you know, and I think about that a lot. I really do. You know, what if I would have left when my mind first told me to? You know, I know it sounds crazy, but, you know, maybe I could have done something. I don't know.
It doesn't, because when Dayton, you know, it happened so suddenly, and he went, I carried him downstairs, and an EMT lived behind us, and he came over, and him and I were doing CPR on him. And I would think that over in my head, why didn't I breathe harder? Maybe I should have breathed harder, you know, something.
Right.
But I had to just let it go and realize it was his time to go. God opened his arms up to him.
Well, I can relate to that too, feeling that way, especially being pregnant. I'm thinking, well, maybe I eat right, or did I take enough of that vitamin, or did I take enough of that one, or was I supposed to go for that? Yeah, so you definitely feel that too. Like, maybe could I have done something differently? I can relate to that.
Well, then you have to take a look at it. If you have to be honest with yourself, could you have done something differently, and was it because of, you know, I think we should take responsibility for those things which are our fault to the proper degree. We shouldn't exaggerate them. But then when we have a tragedy, and the tragedy is not as a result of us, we just have to grieve, feel sorry for the fact that we weren't there to help, but don't take on extra guilt. Eric, if your mother had said, come on home, you would have been there in a flash. She said no. She made a choice.
That's
now, I'm talking as an outsider, so I can look at it more clinically than you can. But you shouldn't feel guilty. You should feel sorrowful over the death of your mom, but not guilty.
Yeah, but
I gave my guilt to God. I gave my guilt to God, and he reassured me. So...
Okay. Well, I guess, you know, it was a gut feeling I had that I needed to go. But when she said no, you know, I'm like, okay, all right, she says everything is okay. But I had that gut feeling that, yeah, I really do need to get up and, you know, move. But I went with what she said, you know, and I think about that a whole lot, you know, like I should have listened to my gut and rolled out then when I was thinking about it, you know, instead of when she was placed in hospice, you know, and barely recognizing people, you know, so, you know.
But there's nothing you could have done except giving her consolation, which is what, you know, you would have liked to have done. But who knows? Maybe she could have said, you know, she would have said yes, she would have gone home. You would have found at the time when you arrived that it hadn't spread, it hadn't metastasized that much yet. But then after maybe you were there a week, maybe it would have. So you couldn't have done anything anyway, even if you were there. So she said no. She made the choice. If it was a mistake on her part, it was a mistake on her part. But all you have to do is grieve and just be glad for the time, you know, that you were with your mom.
It's
hard.
And the thing about it is, when my brother was going through it, you know, me and him talking on the phone, and I asked him the same question. I say, are you ready for me to come home? He said, yes. So, you know, immediately I packed up and I rolled out.
There you go.
But before I can get there, he had to fell into a coma, you know. And, you know, that, you know, so for me, decided going there to talk to him, you know, to going into a hospital room and seeing all these tubes running out of him, you know, that wasn't a good feeling at all. Because basically what I said, damn, not again. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Not again.
We went through that with Dayton. They had him on life support, and I hear you on all those tubes. And then we had to make that decision. At first, you know, I'm an organ donor. And they came to us and asked us if we wanted to donate his organs. And I remember going outside with my father and saying, I can't, that's my baby. I feel bad, I can't. And we went back up and they said, no, we're not going to donate his organs because we don't know what it is. I mean, you ought to read this autopsy report. Everything is normal, normal, normal. They tested him for everything. And so they said, so then we had to make the decision to unplug. And that we had called Dalton to ask him if he was wanting to come up here and say goodbye to Dayton. And Dalton didn't want to. And then that was okay. You know, at first I was angry, but I thought, no, he, you know, I don't know what was going through Dalton's head. Dalton, what do you remember that?
All I remember was, like, they called and asked if I wanted to come up there, and I don't really remember them saying that, but I remember asking if I could talk to him.
Whose music is that?
Well, we have elevator music, eh?
I'm trying to figure out where it's coming from. I'll find out in a minute. Okay, I found it.
So I just remember them asking me if I wanted to come see him, and all I remember saying was, well, can I just talk to him? Can I just talk to him? But they said he was gone. He had already passed away, and so I couldn't talk to them.
You know what, though? I'm glad you said that because, you know, with my biological father, you know, even though he had passed before I got there. And you know what? And that's another thing that really bothered me was everybody passed before I could get there, you know, say their final, basically. You know, everybody didn't pass, but everybody was in a state where I really couldn't talk to them. You know, in the case of my biological father, he had passed on. Okay, so, and what I did, I went and asked the funeral director just to let me in the back so I could have that final conversation with him. You know, and the, you know, bunch of hit back and forth, I finally got to, you know, go back there and have my final conversation with him, which I kind of think helped a little bit in that situation. But, you know, it's always that I always felt that I need to have that final conversation, you know, and not to get approval or anything, just to let them know, you know, it's okay to, you know, okay, you know, I do understand. It's not like to tell them I love them or whatever, because I feel you should do that while they're living anyway. But when it's,
yeah,
it's down
right.
to the last that last step right there, you know, I feel that you know, there is a conversation that you have to have with them. If it's just to say, it's okay to go. I understand. You know, because a lot of our loved ones will hold on just for us. You know, in the case of my brother, man, he fought because he didn't want to leave his wife and his family. You know, and we, you know, and we just had to tell him eventually, you know, it's time. You know, go ahead. You know, and excuse me, and you know. And, you know, when they say, I'm tired, when they land there and say, oh, I'm so tired, you know, that's usually a signal, you know, that they're really ready to go. So you have to let them know that it's okay. It's okay to go. You know, even though you hurting and you really don't want to say that, but you have to come to the reality, to realization that is something they need to hear.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's listening to y'all's stories. You know, that's something I wish I had. I actually have an incompetent cervix, so that's what makes it hard for me to have a child, and that's why I had to medically get my tubes clipped and burnt, so I can't have any more kids at 28. But I didn't make it to that point. With one of my kids, it was an emergency. You know, I had a high-risk pregnancy. All of them have been, but it was an emergency. We were going to try to push the baby out. The baby was fine. I'm looking at my son on the screen, moving around, happy, everything's fine. And when it was time to push and on the way out is when he passed. So when he reached the air, he was already gone.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, man, if I, you know, that just the not being able to do anything about that, that's when I felt like, man, I missed something. And then with one of my sons, it was a matter of, like you said, having to let go. I had to make the decision for them to pull the plug. My son was a pound. And, you know, my daughter, she was 1 pound, 7 ounces, and she lived. Yasmin's 6 now. But before then, you know, I had a son, he was a pound, and, you know, they do a lot to revive those babies. And they will continue to revive your baby and try to keep your baby alive if that be your wish. But at that point, just seeing him so little and suffering like that, I just felt like my wishes weren't what was important at that point. You know, what I want to go on is it had to be bigger than me. So I had to make that decision to say, you know what, let him go. Let him go. God's got it. Let him go. And I think that was the hardest thing I could have ever done, was to decide, you know, to let somebody go. Or for that to be a choice that you gave me, you know, for somebody to say, okay, do you want to let him go, or do you want us to keep trying? So sometimes I still have to live with the fact that I let him go.
But you welcomed him into God's arms.
All right. Well, hold on. Let me bring Pianki in and see what he has to add to it. Good afternoon, Mr. Pianki. How you doing?
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you something, Eric. I heard you say that your brother said he was tired, but you know, sometimes I say that too after being on the show with that maze all the time.
Pianki.
Huh?
Well, I don't want to hear that. You got anything else to add to this, what we're talking about?
Well, you know, I hear what you're saying. You know, people go through those things, and it's very difficult. Nobody knows what you're actually feeling. But it's those different perspectives that you take. It's the different perspectives that you take. You know, the older you get, you're supposed to be able to go through that a little bit more boldly than you did when you was younger, because at some point in time people are going to start resting their heads on your shoulder, so you have to be prepared. It's a gradual process, but sooner or later it does come.
Mm-hmm.
life must go on, right?
Well, that's what they say. That's what they say. So let me when your wife passed, how did you get over your grieving? How did you work your way through it?
Well, I had, you know, it was a couple of moments that a person had, being that I'd been around my wife since we was like 10 years old. Mm-hmm. So it takes a while to get used to that individual not being around anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But there's younger life that depends on you. You know, one thing, one reason, you probably heard me say, one reason I don't go to clubs and chase after women and drink and mess with drugs and things is because I'm not living life just for myself. Others depend on me. Whether it's my family and whether it's the children at the Boys and Girl Club, that the young boys that depend on me to teach them how to play baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's my grandson's high school ball team who depends on me to coach them, to help them achieve the greatest level of performance. Or my grandson who sometimes wish I'd go away when I make him read that extra chapter in his book. So
so basically you did, as some of the experts say, you got busy. You found things to keep you busy.
Well, I always was busy, but what I'm saying is that people have to realize that at some point in time, you don't just live for yourself. You live for others also. It's your hoping that you can make things a lot better when you leave than what it was when you came.
Kind of like what Miss Stacia said with the fact that she still had her son. She had to keep, you know, she had to keep on going because she had another child to take care of and responsibilities that still needed to be met.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you, Shasta.
Yeah, you know, my wife lost my life. Wife didn't carry a boy to term that we lost.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I look back on it today, I wish I had a dozen children, really. But you know,
right,
coming up, you just don't think that way. My wife's friend. Well, she was my girlfriend for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Early, her mother had 22 children. And matter of fact, some of them she gave away to women who couldn't have children. So that's the way things was done back in those days. It weren't as selfish as we are today.
Right. That's a powerful woman. That's a strong woman.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
I know.
See, I had cancer when I was pregnant with Dayton. So, and I was 24, and so all we have is Dalton, you know, right now here on Earth. We still have Dayton in our hearts. Mm. And it's just really interesting to hear from a kid's perspective on how they deal with it. Because they deal with it totally different than us adults.
Right. I agree with that. You know, that's why I was asking him from his point of view, you know, how do we deal with in telling a child about losing a loved one, you know.
And I was going to ask you, Mr. Eric, did your son know your mom?
What?
I was going to ask you, did your son know your mom?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. But I wouldn't let him come to the funeral. I mean, the memorial. You know,
how old was he?
How old was he? He was, I think, about four. Yeah, about four. Four? Three or four. Yeah, three or four. You know.
We asked
and,
Dalton if he
and,
wanted
and,
to.
You know,
we
and
sorry.
Oh, I'm gonna say, and the reason why, because I don't think he was ready. He was ready for that, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really don't think he was ready for that. And then when my biological father passed, you know, he didn't come because he was still in here in Texas. And, you know, I had to talk to him after that, though, because he made the statement that every time he meet one of his grandparents, they die. And he thought he was the cause of that.
Yeah.
So me and him had to have a sit down and a father and son talk. So, yeah.
Are your sons still alive?
Yes, he is. Yes, my son is.
Well,
yeah,
you have something to live for.
Yeah,
right
there. That's right. That's right.
Right there. And we asked Dalton if he wanted to go. He was 8 at the time. But see,
mm-hmm.
When we got home from the hospital, he started getting sick. So we called the hospital and they said, get him here immediately because they had no idea what happened to Dayton. So they had him quarantined.
Mm-hmm.
We had to beg because he wanted to go. We had to beg
them
to go.
And I remember having they had all the IVs in my hand, and they weren't going to let me go. But then they gave me it was like a little life alert. So that while we were at the funeral, something happened, I could hit that button, and they would come out immediately.
We had Flight for Life people there because it touched everybody in our neighborhood.
They were afraid that the same thing was going to happen to me, so they didn't want that to happen. So they were all there keeping an eye and giving me the life alert thing to make sure the same thing didn't happen.
Here's this little kid going through all this grown-up stuff. You know, can you imagine? I mean, I just wanted to dig into his brain and figure out what he was thinking.
Right.
And it wasn't till he got older when he wrote this book.
All right.
On his feelings.
Wow. And, Dalton, you want to tell about the book a little bit more about the book? You know, and, you know, how I can help people out there that's listening.
The book, it's mainly a memoir about the journey my brother and I took before we moved out here and then him passing away. And so it's just a memoir recollecting all those memories and tries to show people that there's other people going through the same thing they might be going through, but not only an adult, it's through a child's eyes and showing them how a child went through the loss and grief of a loved one.
Okay.
And they can
go
to DaltonGusick.com and they can pick up their copy or subscribe for a free preview of the book.
All right. Joe, are you back with us now?
Yeah. You hear me?
Okay. Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay.
All right.
And you know something else too, Eric. Different societies handle death different than what we handle, how you go about, I guess you can call it a celebration, even if it's grief, in here in the United States. And, you know, my family never believed that the person, you know, a person just has went into another realm. And we have had all kind of experiences. My wife, her family, and her ethnic group, they celebrate death. I mean, their celebration may go on for a week or longer. And, of course, they don't, you know, they don't immediately bury people like they do here, because it takes a long time for the entire family to come from miles around to attend, you know, whatever type of celebration that's going to be had. And some celebration, they plan music, dancing, and bands playing, and so on.
Do you think that's a better way of doing it? It helps. I mean, if you have all the family there and you celebrate for a week or whatever, and you have the family there to help be your crutch, I guess you can say your crutch, and y'all can lean on each other during that time, do you think that's a better way of doing it?
Well, yeah, I do. And, you know, I tell the story of my wife died. A friend of mine that I know, who was here in St. Louis doing a lecture after she, you know, was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I never told him that she died. And I called him up a week later after we couldn't have a conversation with him during the time he was here. He told me to call him, you know, next week. So I called him next week, and he said, oh, by the way, your wife told me to tell you to watch your daughter. And he didn't know my, I never told him that my wife had died.
That must be something in a male gene, because that's how Dalton was, and that's how my husband was too. You men must keep everything all bottled up and don't want to talk about it. Just stay busy, stay busy. Keep on working, keep on working. I know my husband went through a spending spree, and then he knew that was part of his stages of going through the grief. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Go right ahead.
Don't start putting on.
Yeah, but this guy, he never, I never told him. He didn't, my wife didn't even know him, so apparently her spirit must have communicated with him and told him that. So those things do happen. I can tell you hundreds more stories, but that's not what your program is about.
And not today. What you were saying, Joe?
I was just saying to her, don't put that on the mail, Gene. About being bottled up.
Don't put it on the mail, Gene.
Yeah, she said it must be part of the mail,
okay.
Gene, where men bottle things up.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Well,
I mean,
I'll talk about that another
because time. That's what we're taught to do.
Yeah.
You know. And speaking of that, I'm glad you did bring that up. Speaking of that, is that one of the main reasons that men have more trouble with handling grief? Is because we're taught we have to be stronger, and you know, we have to be the so-called man of the house. You know, we have to show strength for everyone else. Does that play a role in the way we handle stress?
I don't think so. I think, again, that's for another show, because I'm going to redirect that to the women not being there in their capacity to handle a man's grief.
Oh, I wanted my husband to cry. I wanted my husband to talk. I wanted him, because I felt like with him not doing that, he didn't care.
There's a reason why he didn't do it, without my knowing him. And like Eric was saying, which I've said many a time, we're indoctrinated with this culture of men don't cry.
Yep.
But it's not just that. If we do cry, I remember getting into a semi-argument with this one particular gal when my aunt had died. And then she starts asking me questions, well, was it like your favorite aunt and stuff? I said, look, it's my aunt. She's my relative. She is one of my favorite aunts. And she's asking me, why am I getting upset over her? Because she's being so blasé about my being sorrowful over her death. So, but then again, this particular show is very serious. You have guests on, Eric, an author. So I don't want to redirect it into a topic that I really wouldn't mind getting into some other time.
Okay. Well, thank you for that, Joe. Anyway, as I was saying, Dalton, how do you feel about what I just said?
I agree with what you're saying, that everybody goes through different processes of grief, and that it takes time to overcome it. But if you ask God into your life and you pray to him, then he'll work it out when the time is right, and you'll overcome your loss and grief.
Okay. All righty then. Let's see, we got about 20 minutes left, so we're going to keep on going.
You know what's the bad thing about grief? A lot of people feel guilty over stuff that they shouldn't feel guilty about, which is something I touched on before. A lot of people, myself included, I missed my uncle's death by 10 minutes. I went to the hospital. I saw him about the night before or the night before that, either two nights before or one night before. And he was in the hospital.
Right.
He was dying of lung cancer. Then I went to see him again. And as soon as I got off the elevator, there was an emergency. And doctors and nurses are running down the hallway. And I knew it was to his room. By the time I got to his room, he was dead.
Mm.
So I wanted to see him, of course. But now,
right,
because of this particular show, I'm thinking that, you know, we're either going to be there at the time of our loved one's death, or not.
And it's okay.
Yeah. So you're always going to miss your loved one unless you are there at the exact moment of his or her death. And if they die in your arms, it's not any more cheerful. It's a hell of a lot more sorrowful if you're...
Exactly.
You know, so, you know, you're going to be feeling bad if you're there. You're going to be feeling bad if you're not there. But one shouldn't feel guilty for not being there.
Like I said, when I carried Dayton down the stairs and he took his last breath, I had a hard time, and it took me probably a good year or so to realize that was his last breath. My problem was is that we were doing CPR on him immediately. And when we had to come to the decision of unplugging the machines, it's because his brain had swelled so much and was going into his spine. And so he was basically gone. The machines were keeping him alive. And I struggled with that. And that's why I said, if only I could have breathed harder, you know. And I would cry out to God, you know, why? I was doing CPR on him. They put a trachea in him. They did all this stuff. You know, what? Why?
And you know what? Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead and finish.
Like I said, God opened his arms for him. And he's got one hell of a kid up there in heaven.
Wow. Let me ask you a question. And this happened to me as well. You know, to see your child or someone you love on life support, you know, all these tools, machines, breathing form, does that add a little bit more weight to your grief that you're going to have to deal with?
You know, I think I was in so much shock at that time. I just wanted him to wake up. I mean, each. You know, but we're talking about a child here. You know, it's different if it was, it would have been different if it was my mother, because I know my mother wouldn't want to live on life support. This is my baby. This is my 4-year-old ornery little guy. You know, I wanted him to wake up. So... it's kind of, that question's kind of hard to answer because I was in so much shock.
And I was just sitting at the top of the stairs, and I didn't know what any of the machines were or what the long flat bed is or what was going on until somebody moved, and I just saw my brother laying on the floor there, and then I was just immediately rushed next door and didn't know anything or what was going on.
How old were you, Dalton, at the time?
8.
So he was 4 and you were 8 then, huh?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow. You know, and no, I asked that question because I'm just sitting here remembering, thinking about he was on life support, you know, and, you know, trying to get my sister-in-law to tell him to take him off of it, and you know, she didn't want him to go, so he just laid there, and when the hospital was getting ready to force her to take him off, she moved him to another hospital, you know, and it just prolonged it and prolonged it. Eventually they did, and you know, he still lived for about a whole another month, you know, on his own. But I think it, you know, sometimes, you know, we add to our own grief a little bit, the weight of our grief by doing things like that. That's just the way I feel.
I could have done that because there's times that I thought, why did we unplug it so soon? Even though 24 hours had gone by. And neurologists, I mean, all these specialists were telling us it's the machines that's keeping him alive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I thought about that, but then I don't know. It's that faith in God. God was carrying me through that moment that must have already knew. Now, when they unplugged him, they put him in mine and my husband's arms, and we rocked him to sleep. So...
Mm.
Oh, that had to be horrible.
Yeah.
And that part I will never forget because I hummed his favorite song, the Brahms Lullaby. That would always calm him down. So,
and what is it when
cover him up
they,
and keep him warm. Go ahead,
when they,
Dalt.
When they say that they can't, they don't know the reason or the cause of the death, they have to put something down.
Mm-hmm.
So they put down a respiratory failure?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And they say that's a generic thing, you know.
Mm.
So.
Mm. Well, despite all the advances in medicine, there's still a lot about the human anatomy that doctors don't know.
Yeah. Well, they basically told us that he had the whooping cough, but no fever, no cough.
Mm.
And they said that if we would have brought him to the hospital, they would have sent us home and told him, because he kind of acted like he was coming down with a cold, but nothing major. He's still running around like a normal four-year-old boy, you know, a kid. And ate supper. They tested him for food poisoning. They tested him for meningitis, the ammonia, everything under the sun. And everything was normal, normal, normal. And but they said that it attacked his body so hard and so fast that his body didn't have time to react.
Wow.
What's the major thrust of your book, Dalton? Is it about, I'm thinking, and what comes to my mind, the very first thing is that you are writing a book for those who are
going through
grieving about a loved one, the future that you could not have with him. Is that that what it is?
Yes, and it's mostly about that, and then about my journey moving from Kansas to Colorado and leading up to his death and how I got over the process and went through the grieving process. And that
it's from his eyes.
Well, yeah, but since he was eight, I'm only...
The
only thing that comes to my mind is since he was 8 years old was that this is my brother who I never could get to know as well as I should have.
Well, let me tell you, them two were glued to the hip. Dayton was the one who would get him out there, and Dalton was the one who was Dayton. No, you can't pop a willy over a 2x4. You're going to end up without a helmet. You can't do that. You know, he was the motherly. You know, them two were they were great. They were good for each other.
Yeah, Eric.
I was going to say, Joe, you know, you'd be surprised at the things that would come out of a child's mind that just would, you know, that is just boggle most adults' mind because it's so innocent and truthful. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes that's what it takes. Mm-hmm. But we have 11 minutes left to go. We're going to have to cut the show off at the regular time today because I got to meet the teacher date today with my son. So... what we're going to do, we're going to go ahead, as we always do, give everybody a final word. And we're going to start with Mr. Pianki. Your final word, sir? Pianki?
Well, I hope that I usually put my phone on mute so I don't interfere. It takes time to come back on board. But I hope that everybody learns from the experiences and get over. And, you know, having little talks like this among people who are experiencing similar events in their life helps a whole lot.
Yeah.
And there's much to be gained.
I agree. All right. Thank you, sir. And I see you tomorrow for Freedom Friday. All right. Shasta, you up?
Yeah. So after hearing everybody's stories, Mr. Eric, you see that you're not alone. That, you know, it's actually people who feel the same hurt that you feel and the same emotions that you're going through, we feel them too. So my best advice is just, you know, to get in your word because that's what will speak to you.
All right, man. Thank you. And it's glad to see you back in the area.
Yeah.
All right. Talk to you later. All right, Joe, you up.
I don't have anything to say. I think, it's good for people to express their sorrow, however they want to do it, on their own individual basis. So that's about it for me.
All right, sir. And I'll see you tomorrow also.
Okay.
Have a good one.
You too.
All right. Tayshia, your turn.
Tayshia. Well, I just want to say that you will be in our prayers each and every day. And, once again, I'm just so proud of Dalton for expressing his feelings and having the courage to put it into a book. And he's done this all on his own, you know, put it into a book. And I hope people see it from a kid's perspective. I'm waiting for the second part of it. But love your son. When you go to your parent teacher, give him a big old hug.
Okay, I will. All righty. Thank you, ma'am. And you're welcome to come back on the show anytime.
All righty.
All right.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, Dalton. It's on
you. I just want to say what a pleasure it was to be on your show, and that I'm here for you, whatever you're going through. And I just want people to check out this book and take the time to read it. And if they're not sure about it, get that free preview. And I just want to say what a blessing it is to be able to write this book and the journey it's gone on and all the things that have happened to it.
Okay. All right, let them know one more time where they can find the name of the book and how they can contact you.
They can contact me and find the book on my website at daltongiesick.com. And right on the website, they can find everything they need to connect on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, whatever, to purchase the book, get their free preview, sign up for my blog. And it's just all on daltongiesick.com.
All right, sir. And once again, I want to say thank you for joining me today. We really enjoyed it, and you're welcome to come back anytime, okay?
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, y'all. That was Mr. Dalton Giesick, you know, the author. Brotherly Love, I tell you, the young man is doing great things. All right, as for my final sayings, my final say, it's like this, y'all. You know, the grieving process is something that, I guess, becomes individualized. No two people go through it the same way. As you can tell, there's different ways to go through it, just like there are different phases of grief. But the one major thing that kept coming back was, you know, put your trust in God. You know, as long as you do that, you will be all right. Of course, you're going to go through your moments. You know, I go through my moments. I do. You know, but I'm still here to do my show every day. You know, and that's only, you know, the work of God. You know, and I do believe that my mom and dad and all them upstairs, you know, looking down, you know, helping me with the show, you know, making me be able enough to do it every day and hopefully bring y'all some great information. All right. Well, that's my final say for the day. Just take care. Okay. All right. Well, tomorrow is what we call Freedom Friday. Y'all know how that go. Any and everything goes. So that's all I'm going to say. Remember, keep smiling, show appreciation, and forgive with an open heart. And don't forget, if you haven't forgiven yourself, there's no way you can forgive anyone else. All right? So until tomorrow, 2 p.m. Central, 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 Pacific Time, this was Let's Talk on Blog Talk Radio. I'm the host, Mr. Talk, and I am out of here. So
Baby, why?